Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraver. On today's show, subsidizing Uber. While most of the conversations we've had about ride sharing on this program have to do with restrictions and bans and all sorts of regulatory problems, we're actually talking about the other side of the spectrum today. Far from just allowing Uber to operate or trying to ban it, some local governments are beginning to actually subsidize it. What's going on? Joining me to discuss this is Jared Meyer, research fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of Uber Positive, Why Americans Love the Sharing Economy. Jared, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Evan.
It's kind of been a while. I think our listeners might be going through withdrawal.
Well, we've kind of talked about everything that we could about Uber, except for now subsidizing
it. Oh, don't say everything. You'd be out of a job. So, Jared, how do we go from talking about outright bans and all sorts of other problems like that to Uber getting government gifts?
Well, I think governments have realized Uber and the sharing economy on a whole isn't going away. And if government can't ban something or heavily regulate it, they'll instead just decide to subsidize it because they just can't leave things as they are. They don't realize that things are working. Uber continues to develop. Ride sharing as a whole continues to develop. But they cannot resist just getting their fingers in ride sharing and trying to screw it up.
Well, all right. Maybe that's one reason. Maybe it's that their natural progression is try to ban it, then try to regulate it, then F it, let's subsidize it. But there's got to be something else going on, right?
Yeah. So the stated justification, and I don't think there's any ulterior motives here, at least on the side of government, is to expand public transportation. And if you look at this, I thought this was going to come about a year and a half ago when Uber started releasing all these reports about how its service complements public transit. You know, the last mile problem that everyone's familiar with, Uber's saying we can solve it. And they released reports in cities such as Austin, Portland, Chicago, just talking about how great they are for public transit. So they've really been setting the stage for cities to go, hey, this might be a better use of our money. We're going to subsidize Uber instead of spending more money on, let's say, a new expensive bus route.
And where is this happening so far around the country? What governments are starting to subsidize Uber?
So we have Pinellas County, which is in the Tampa Bay area, and then Altamonte Springs, which is an Orlando suburb. And they have kind of different programs, but they're similar in that they only subsidize Uber. And now a new city in Colorado, Centennial, is going to start subsidizing Lyft later this month. So this isn't the case of government, let's say, putting together some proposal and saying, if any company can meet it, you're open to receiving a subsidy from us. Instead, they're picking specific companies and working with them, which I'm sure we'll discuss is a lot more problematic than kind of an open bid system.
Well, so let's talk about the whole thing about expanding public transportation. Let's use Washington, D.C. as an example. Right now, the metro is an absolute unmitigated disaster. There's single tracking, trains randomly getting canceled. The whole city has been turned upside down by this. But of course, in a city as densely populated as D.C., Uber Pool has gotten so cheap that you can go to and from work during rush hour for $3 each way, which is about close to $1.75 bus ride or somewhere between $2 and $4 each way on the metro. Now that happened without subsidies, but what about other places that maybe don't have the population density and maybe the cities are making a calculation that they can spend a bunch of money on buses that don't work, on trains that don't work, or ambulance services for the disabled or whatever, and it's not worth it? Would it be better to just help make something that's already working cheaper so that it's more like public transportation, as opposed to maybe spending $5 or $6 each way to get to work? Is this just a simple cost benefit analysis, and the city decides that subsidizing a private company, maybe that's not in tune with libertarian economics, but it's practical if they don't have good public transit options? What do you say to that?
That's one thing that the cities were talking about. For example, Pinellas County cut two of their bus lines that had low ridership. And rather than just, you know, leaving it at that, they decided anyone who was taking an Uber along that route would get a 50% discount up to $3 a ride when they took an Uber. And they claimed it was successful. I mean, it saved them money over continuing the bus route, so that's for sure. And they've now expanded it to, I think it's about 20 places in the city where they can go to and you get half off your Uber ride. So it's supposed to tie in with public transit. And in other cities, as you said, besides, let's say, New York, D.C., San Francisco, cities like that where Uber Pool's working, it's one argument to try to make the services cheaper. But people forget that subsidies have two sides. It's not just making something cheaper. You also have, obviously, taxpayers paying for it. And then on top of that, subsidies tend to drive up the price of what's being subsidized. I mean, just look at student loans, practically any construction projects, especially stadiums. You have sugar, all different agricultural subsidies. So when the government starts throwing more money at Uber and it's only that company, they have an excuse to really just raise their prices.
And is that the logic there, similar to college tuition, that argument is that companies like Uber and Lyft and companies like colleges, they know what the market rate for things like a ride or college education are. Those two market rates are independent of the subsidy. So then when they get the subsidy, they say, we can still charge this amount and then we'll just pocket the subsidy. So it doesn't actually make anything cheaper. Is that essentially the logic you're getting at, that they know that people in these Florida towns would pay for the Uber ride anyway? So now they're being incentivized to just take the government money and not actually lower prices.
Yeah, or maybe not do a one for one in what they take and lower, but find out a place where maybe, you know, let's pass on 60% of this subsidy back to customers because they'll get a slightly expanded market and they'll be able to pocket the difference. I just worry when you're looking at any industry, once they start getting subsidized and cozying up with government, like now Uber and Lyft are, I think there's a lot of reason for thinking that the innovation is going to stop in that industry, and it's not going to do much to really reduce prices.
Now, so let's get to the motivation behind this. There's multiple ways of looking at this. You could say that regardless of Uber and Lyft and their lobbying and what they care about from a public policy standpoint, which is mostly about deregulation, public officials in cities are probably coming to the conclusion that this needs to be subsidized for public transit, at least in some cases, independently of what the companies are doing. Do you have a sense of whether it's really the companies that are pushing for favors? I mean, rent seekers are going to rent seek. We've seen, you know, Netflix, all sorts of companies try to get government goodies, even if, you know, on the other hand, they're arguing for deregulation in other parts. Or is it really just that these public officials want to do this on their own accord and the companies are not going to say no to free money? It's not really free, it's taxpayers, obviously. Which of those do you see as more likely, or is it a mixture of both?
I see it as Uber kind of started the conversation by putting out all the reports talking about how much they complement public transit, and then some city officials who, rightly, sure, in the short term on these pilot projects, they are saving money. So there is an argument to be made from a public policy standpoint that we could do this. Obviously, if you start expanding this and go beyond just targeted bus stops and you're just giving blanket subsidies, which is where it could end up going, that could be more problematic. But right now, these programs, from what the cities have said, seem to be successful. But I'm arguing almost more from the point of Uber and Lyft, that taking these subsidies is a terrible idea. First of all, if you're taking these subsidies, as we talked about, the prices, you could end up raising your prices fairly easily. So what that does is open you up for then fare regulations from the cities. If you're trying to complement or replace public transit, you need accessibility requirements. You need to make sure you're on the road during these hours. So there you could have work requirements. What you're really doing is saying, you know what, I'm going to take the money from the government, but then I'm opening myself up to having to follow all of their rules and really becoming more like a common carrier.
So have Uber and Lyft basically made a cost-benefit analysis in these markets and have said whatever the problems that the subsidies might bring in the regulatory realm? Of course, it makes sense, like you suggested, that when something is subsidized, the appetite for regulation will be increased and that people will say, well, you're benefiting from tax dollars, so now I should have a say in how your business is run. Have they made a calculation that say, however bad this gets, it's worth it for the subsidies? Is this a business decision they've made? So are you suggesting that they're not anticipating the regulatory backlash enough that they're making a poor gamble?
Well, I know the people who work at the companies are very smart, but I don't think they're taking the long view look on this. And maybe they just haven't seen what happens to other industries when you start cozying up to government. Because I think there is actually a much stronger, if not even a solid argument for regulation when a company is taking taxpayer dollars. We don't want them to just be able to go in Austin and all of a sudden say, you know what, we're going to leave because you added this new regulation. No, the city has built its plan around you being the public transit provider. There is an argument to say that, no, you need to make those companies stay then and they can't get out. I mean,
all right, that makes sense. So would a preferable model, let's say that we're not going to end up with a pure libertarian situation where no money is going to be spent, because there are situations where there's federal grants on the table, there are state grants on the table. There are situations in which governments have money and it has to be spent. There's just no way around it. But there are sometimes smarter ways to spend it than other ways. So this is a case of winners and losers, right? You've got the government saying, Uber, you're going to get the subsidy, Lyft, you're going to get the subsidy. That can be problematic because while those two companies dominate today, they might not always be the best, or there are other companies that might want to crop up and compete.
Yeah, and in every city so far, only one of the companies is getting it.
Right. So would a better model be a kind of open access model where the government says, look, there's a subsidy on the table for ride sharing of any kind. And if you meet these neutral specifications of what a transportation network company is, you are entitled to the subsidy. Maybe it's not a level playing field because companies like Uber and Lyft can probably take better advantage of those subsidies. But if a small company comes around with a different business model, they're trying to compete, at least they can charge, they don't have to charge a lot more for their service. Would that be a preferable model for subsidies if we're going to do that?
I'd say that's a preferable model, but the top model that we should look for if we want to, you know, let's say expand transportation options for low-income people, which if you look at Pinellas County, they gave free Uber rides to low-income residents after 9 p.m. Rather than just giving them, like giving Uber the money or subsidizing these rides directly, you could let them somehow report it. Like you have a budget for transportation that you can use in any way you want. That way we're not even locking in ride sharing as the option. So while the movement away from, let's say, set public transit lines, especially the light rail projects like they're trying to build in DC and all these different ideas, while moving towards things like ride sharing is great, I think having a more open model, preferably without subsidies, but if we're going to have them, have it be how you described, or have the money go directly to low-income people. Not everyone needs a subsidy. Like I know you and I don't need one to make our $3 rides to Uber or to work in the morning cheaper. You know, give it to people who need it.
Uber and Lyft's biggest public policy problem to date is still this worker classification issue. We've talked about it on the show many times, how they currently classify their workers as independent contractors because that's what works for the gig economy. Full-time employment or part-time employment would invite a whole host of problems like liability, workman's comp, providing benefits, et cetera, that haven't been worked out yet. If Uber and Lyft start to try to position themselves as public transit replacements, and we're seeing that. I mean, I live in DC, so my Facebook ads are tailored to DC. And in 1 week, we have the trifecta of metro derailments, fires, and one of the employees being tied to ISIS. So that was impressive, even for the WMATA. So if they're going to position themselves as the solution, as the alternative, and everyone's riding around the city paying $3 every time they ride, that starts to look like more an employment model or like a business model that's very rigid. Like you're going to end up having three or four people in your car all the time. They're always paying $3. The more efficient they get, it's the less they look like this free-for-all gig economy thing. So is there a risk that positioning yourself as a replacement for public transit, there's no way to do that without inviting regulation, inviting potentially an unwelcome conversation about worker classification, unless you find a happy middle of the road that works for everyone?
I think what you brought up is important. And if we know anything about regulators, it's that they hate uncertainty. And if there's just a small chance something could go wrong, that drives them crazy. Well, just think, if under Uber's current model, it could happen that just zero drivers are on the road during evening rush hour. I mean, it's probably not going to happen. I don't think it's happened yet, but it could happen. And that's not good enough for regulators or policymakers when they're trying to set up a public transit option.
And it could especially happen in places not like DC, in places where they are subsidizing it in an effort to increase cars on the road. But look, if you're in some small town in Florida that has, it's entirely plausible that you've got Uber from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. and not after. And is it really public transit if you can't get it after? I mean, maybe some systems close early, but others don't. Other people rely for night shifts and things like that. So that could be a problem. If you're in a small town, it's totally reasonable to think that there's not going to be any Ubers on the road at midnight.
Yeah, so then that would lead to set shifts and Uber after having to decide when workers work. Not only would that just change their business model, but it would rightly make some differences on a worker classification if they started doing that. I just think looking, you know, these pilot programs now, sure, they're saving the city money on a small scale if they stay, you know, going pick up or drop off at a bus location, it's 25% off if you have it limited and targeted. They're not the end of the world. But what I'm talking about is where this is going and how I see regulations and subsidies constantly work out is that once a government accepts a business, that's what they try to do. I mean, just look at Miami. they got a federal grant from the government, and they're trying to use over $500,000 from it to subsidize Uber and Lyft rides to two train stations. I mean, just, it wasn't even 4 months ago, they were handing out fines to Uber and Lyft drivers for simply operating. I've never seen such a quick turnaround from just try to ban to, hey, let's just subsidize it.
And I guess the point you're making is that this is not really a turnaround. It is a different way of exerting control, and that makes sense. So a real turnaround would be we're going to go from talking about bans and restrictions to just letting them do their thing. But when you jump that middle step and you go straight towards subsidies, that looks like, okay, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's a very different thing. Any final thoughts before we close up?
I think that's it. Just I'm hoping that, you know, if Uber keeps actively pushing for these subsidies that exclude other companies, it's really going to stop me from being a fanboy from them. So they should think about that too. They're going to lose.
Is that a threat on the Tech Policy Podcast? Is that a first?
I'm not going to confirm or deny that that was a threat.
Well, let's hope that that doesn't get edited out. That's it for today's show. My guest has been Jared Meyer, research fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of Uber Positive, Why Americans Love the Sharing Economy. Jared, thanks for joining the show. Pithy as always.
Thanks, Evan.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Send us an email at media at techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.